Picture this. It's the early morning hours in New York City.
A city that never sleeps, right?
Right.
But it's actually at its absolute quietest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're driving down a busy parkway and you're surrounded by that rhythmic blur of streetlights and shadows.
Yeah, it's that kind of drive where the hum of the engine usually just lulls you into the sense of safety.
Like a routine.
Yeah.
But then, in a fraction of a second, that entire routine violently shatters.
Oh,
A
yeah.
car ahead of you loses control. It veers off the road, you hear the screech of tires cutting through the dead of night, and it slams with massive force into a mature oak tree.
And the terror of that initial impact, that's truly just the prologue here.
Right.
Because almost instantly, I mean, before the shattered glass even settles on the asphalt, the vehicle bursts into flames.
And the passengers are still trapped inside.
Yeah.
And this isn't, an opening scene from an action movie. This is a very real incident detailed in the briefing we are looking at for today's deep dive.
It's terrifying. It became this immediate, chaotic, life or death rescue scenario.
The police officers who arrived on the scene, they had to physically smash the vehicle's windows.
Reaching blindly into thick smoke.
Yes, and spreading fire, just to pull those trapped people to safety. It's an incredibly intense recounting of an event that fundamentally forces you to stop and think about the sheer fragility of our daily commute.
It really does. And that split-second transition from a mundane late-night drive to a frantic battle for survival that perfectly frames the mission of our deep dive today.
Right, because we're examining a fascinating, albeit, highly sobering intersection of emergency response, forensic physics, and high-stakes legal advocacy.
We're looking at a specific set of source materials detailing the hidden, catastrophic dangers of roadways in New York City and Westchester County.
And from there, we're going to explore the massive multi-million-dollar legal battles that inevitably follow when a drive goes tragically wrong.
And how victims navigate a system that, quite frankly, often seems stacked completely against them.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because I think we take our vehicles completely for
Oh,
granted.
absolutely.
We view them as these impenetrable, safe, comfortable metal cocoons. We've got our heated seats, our lane assist technology.
A music is playing.
Exactly. But fundamentally, modern cars are essentially rolling supercomputers sitting directly on top of highly combustible fuel.
That's a great way to put it.
And what this briefing points out is how rapidly that perception of a safe cocoon disintegrates. In a severe crash, the very structure designed to protect you can morph into a deadly trap.
Right, because we constantly insulate ourselves with technology and comfort. But the fundamental physics of moving a two-ton object at high speeds using volatile combustible liquids, those physics haven't changed.
No, they haven't.
When you have a high-impact collision, the kinetic energy involved instantly compromises all those safety systems.
Right.
The source material outlines the specific mechanical failures that turn a standard collision into a fiery catastrophe. We are talking about high-pressure fuel system ruptures meeting exposed electrical sparks.
So let's break down the actual mechanics of that. You have these lines carrying pressurized fuel from the tank to the engine. In a massive front or side impact, the chassis crumples.
It just folds up.
Yeah, then those fuel lines get sheared or crushed. And that creates an atomized, highly flammable mist under the hood or beneath the cabin.
And at the exact same time, the battery housing cracks.
Right, or miles of internal wiring are severed, creating this shower of sparks.
And that atomized mist is crucial to understand. Liquid gasoline doesn't burn nearly as aggressively as gasoline vapor mixed with oxygen.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. When those lines shear, the fuel atomizes, creating an incredibly rich, explosive mixture.
So a single spark from a severed battery cable,
Ignites it instantly.
that's terrifying.
It is. And this raises an important question about modern vehicle materials, too. The thermal dynamics of a modern car fire are, well, they're horrific.
Because of the plastics?
Exactly. Today's vehicle interiors are packed with synthetic polymers, plastics, and foams. When those materials ignite, they don't just burn.
What do they do?
They melt, and they release highly toxic gases like hydrogen cyanide and carbon monoxide.
Hydrogen cyanide.
Yeah. The toxic smoke incapacitates victims long before the flames ever actually reach the cabin.
Which makes the physical entrapment even more of a nightmare.
Absolutely.
Because the impact warps the door frames.
Right.
The electronic locks short out, and suddenly you physically cannot get out while this toxic smoke is filling the cabin.
You're completely trapped.
And this is happening while emergency response times might be severely delayed.
That's a huge issue in the text.
The briefing notes that if a crash happens in the early morning hours, or on specific, isolated stretches of roadway, it can take crucial minutes for first responders to arrive.
And every second counts.
It's like trying to thread a needle in the dark while a bomb timer is ticking down.
That delay is a massive factor, and it's deeply tied to the geography.
Right. The text specifically calls out major roadways across NYC and Westchester County, parkways and highways, mostly as prime locations for these catastrophic events. So I have a question about that. If we know the physics, you know, the fuel ruptures meeting electrical sparks causing toxic fires while people are trapped.
Yeah.
Why are those specific parkways such a danger zone?
Yeah.
Is it just the speed of the vehicles late at night, or is there something inherent about the environment of a parkway itself?
Well, what's fascinating here is how the historical geography dictates the modern outcome.
How so?
Think about the design of parkways in Westchester and New York City. Many of these were designed in the 1920s and 1930s.
Oh, wow. That old.
Yeah, they were built for Sunday drives and Model Ts. They were not designed for heavy, modern SUVs traveling at 70 miles per hour.
It makes total sense.
They feature much sharper curves, incredibly narrow shoulders, stone overpasses, and they are intentionally lined with massive, mature trees.
Just like the one the vehicle in our opening scenario struck.
Exactly. So you combine that unforgiving geography with late-night travel routes where visibility is reduced, and add the fact that drivers naturally increase their speeds on empty roads.
It sounds like the absolute perfect storm.
Yeah.
I mean, the margin for error on a dark, winding parkway at 2:00 a.m. is essentially zero.
Right.
If you drift off the road by a few feet, there's no wide, grassy median to catch you. There's an 80-year-old oak tree, or a solid stone wall waiting right next to the asphalt.
I'd actually push back on the phrase perfect storm, though.
Oh, really? Why?
Because a storm implies an act of nature, you know? Something entirely out of our control.
Okay.
What the data in this briefing shows is that these are highly predictable, human-engineered disasters.
Ah, I see what you mean.
The mechanical failures, the sparks, the fuel ruptures, the narrow shoulders. Those are merely the mechanisms of the trauma.
Right.
The catalyst for the crash itself is almost exclusively human behavior.
That's a very fair correction. And the briefing lays out a pretty brutal list of those human behaviors.
It really does.
It points to speeding and reckless driving, obviously. But it also highlights driver fatigue during those late night hours.
Which is huge.
And alcohol or impaired driving, losing control on those sharp historical curves and exits we just talked about. And just the failure to maintain a safe distance.
It's a laundry list of momentary lapses in judgment.
Yeah, that result in absolute devastation.
And it's vital to recognize that these aren't just abstract concepts for an accident report. They are the root causes of severe physical and emotional aftermath.
Right.
The source details the brutal post-crash reality for victims. We are talking about extensive medical treatment, profound emotional trauma, lost wages, and long-term disability.
The human toll is staggering.
It's unimaginable until you're in it.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Because the text makes a point to say that negligent driving doesn't just affect the person behind the wheel.
No, not at all.
Let's use a ripple effect analogy here.
Okay.
A bad decision on the road is like a heavy stone thrown into a still pond.
I like that.
The splash is the initial physical impact. But the ripples violently disrupt the lives of everyone nearby. It puts passengers at risk. It puts completely innocent nearby drivers at risk.
And if we trace that causality, a driver decides to take a Westchester Parkway exit just a little too fast, or they glance at a text message, or they get behind the wheel after a few drinks.
Just a split-second decision.
Right. That seemingly minor decision instantly triggers the physics we discussed. The loss of control, the kinetic impact, the ruptured fuel line, the toxic smoke.
And the ripples from that stone.
They represent months in a hospital burn unit undergoing agonizing skin grafts.
Gosh.
They represent the profound psychological trauma of waking up trapped in a burning vehicle.
Yeah.
They represent the sudden loss of a career because a traumatic brain injury makes it impossible to work. And the impending financial ruin that accompanies long-term disability.
It's so heavy. You are holding the lives, the livelihoods, and the physical well-being of everyone around you in your hands when you drive.
You really are.
But let's follow that ripple effect to its next logical stage based on our sources.
Okay.
Because the immediate trauma, the physical fire, is eventually put out by those heroic first responders. But according to the briefing, once the literal fire is out, a figurative fire begins.
A very expensive fire.
Yeah. You transition from a physical nightmare directly into a treacherous financial and legal reality. You have to deal with the insurance companies.
And that transition is often the most jarring part of the entire process for victims.
I can imagine.
The text presents a harsh, undeniable truth. Insurance companies will actively try to minimize your claim after a serious accident.
Which sounds so cruel. Now, why would an insurer do that in the face of such clear, undeniable devastation?
Because cases involving fire, entrapment, and catastrophic injuries command massive financial payouts.
Bottom line.
Exactly. The financial stakes for the insurers are astronomical, so their defense tactics become incredibly aggressive.
So what does this all mean for the victim? Think about this from the perspective of the person in the hospital bed. You survive a fiery crash. You are physically broken. You're dealing with long-term disability. You can't work. You're drowning in medical bills.
It's overwhelming.
And your reality is having to battle a billion-dollar insurance corporation that wants to minimize what you went through.
That's the reality.
Battling an insurance adjuster on your own over complex liability while you're heavily medicated. It's like trying to fight a raging house fire with a plastic squirt gun. It's a completely asymmetrical fight.
The squirt gun analogy captures the power dynamic perfectly. Insurance companies deploy entire teams of adjusters, private investigators, and defense attorneys.
Wow.
And their sole fiduciary duty is to protect their corporate bottom line.
Right.
They do this by finding ways to shift blame or downplay the severity of the injuries. For instance, an adjuster might call a victim in the hospital just days after the crash to get a recorded statement.
While they're in the hospital.
Yes. Knowing the victim is disoriented or on heavy pain medication, hoping they say something that can be used to deny the claim later.
That is wild.
They use actuarial algorithms designed to find the absolute cheapest possible exit strategy.
And the briefing specifically points out that cases involving fire or entrapment feature incredibly complex liability issues.
They do.
But let's clarify that for a second. Why is liability more complex in a fire crash than a standard fender bender?
Well, when a car burns, the physical evidence of the initial impact is often completely destroyed.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. The skid marks on the asphalt, they're covered in fire retardant foam.
Right.
The crumpled chassis is completely melted and fused together. The vehicle's black box, which records speed and braking data, it might be completely incinerated.
So the proof is just gone.
Exactly. Proving who hit whom, or proving that a specific mechanical failure exacerbated the injuries, requires bringing in forensic engineers and accident reconstruction experts to piece together a melted puzzle.
And I'm guessing the insurance company uses that to their advantage.
Of course. The insurer will exploit that lack of obvious evidence. They'll argue comparative negligence, claiming the victim swerved incorrectly or failed to brake in time.
Just attempting to shift the blame to save millions.
Exactly.
Which brings us to a major focus of our briefing. If you are stepping onto a legal battlefield that treacherous, you don't just want any lawyer.
No, you don't.
You need someone equipped with heavy artillery. The briefing uses the law offices of Norman Gershon as a specific case study for the kind of firepower required in these suits.
It's a great example to analyze.
Right. By looking at his profile, we can reverse engineer exactly what it takes to win against these insurance giants. For example, the text notes his 35 years of trial experience representing victims specifically in serious motor vehicle accidents.
And notice the geographic focus there, too.
Right, Westchester and NYC.
Yeah, his practice is deeply embedded in the exact high-risk areas we identified earlier. The text explicitly names his dedication to fighting for accident victims across Westchester County and New York City,
including White Plains, Yonkers, the Bronx, Manhattan, and Queens.
Exactly. He knows the specific terrain, the local courts, and the unique hazards of those 1930s partways where these accidents actually occur.
There's one detail in the text I really want to challenge, though.
Okay, what is it?
It calls him the attorney other lawyers call to try their toughest cases.
Right, a lawyer's lawyer.
But let's be real, isn't that just marketing copy? I mean, why would a lawyer hand over a massive multi-million-dollar catastrophic injury case to a competitor and lose out on that massive contingency fee? That doesn't make sense from a business perspective.
It sounds counterintuitive on the surface, sure. But if we connect this to the bigger picture of civil litigation, it makes perfect sense.
Okay, explain that.
This is all about risk mitigation and the sheer out-of-pocket cost of going to trial.
Oh, okay.
Many attorneys can expertly handle a straightforward rear-end collision. But when you have a multi-vehicle crash involving a fiery entrapment, severe burns, destroyed evidence, and millions of dollars in lifelong medical care on the line,
the stakes go way up.
The legal maneuvering becomes incredibly intense and incredibly expensive.
Meaning the upfront costs to fight the case are just too high for a standard firm.
Exactly. To fight an insurance company on a catastrophic case, a law firm might have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars out of pocket.
Just to prepare for trial.
Just to hire the biomechanical experts, the fire reconstruction specialists, and the medical actuaries required to prove the case to a jury.
Wow.
Smaller firms don't always have that kind of war chest, and they don't have the specific trial experience to risk losing it all in front of a jury.
So they bring in a ringer?
Right. They partner with a veteran trial lawyer, a lawyer's lawyer who has the capital, the specific expertise, and the courtroom reputation.
That makes sense.
And insurance companies know which lawyers will actually take a case to a jury verdict. They won't offer a fair settlement unless they are terrified of facing that specific veteran in the courtroom.
That makes a lot of sense. And the text mentions the fee structure, too. The only pay if you win contingency model.
Which is crucial.
Going back to our victim in the hospital bed, this levels the playing field. It means a victim who is currently losing wages can access that highly specialized, heavily funded legal firepower without paying massive retainers out of pocket.
Right. The attorney takes on all the financial risk of hiring those expensive experts.
It completely aligns the attorney's success with the victim's recovery, removing the financial barrier to securing top-tier representation in a moment of extreme vulnerability.
Exactly.
But, you know, a reputation as a heavy hitter is just an abstract concept until you look at the actual results.
You need the proof.
A reputation has to be backed up by hard math. The briefing transitions from his background directly into the concrete numbers to prove his effectiveness against these insurers.
And those numbers are significant.
Extremely. The text states he has recovered tens of millions of dollars overall. It lists a $14.5 million settlement for catastrophic injuries.
Wow.
Multiple verdicts over $5 million. A $2.5 million verdict in a Westchester County crash. But there is one number at the very top of the list.
The bus collision.
Right. A $16.5 million verdict for an auto versus bus collision.
That $16.5 million figure is a sobering number to contemplate. And it really demands that we analyze the anatomy of a trial of that magnitude.
Right, because you see a number like $16.5 million, and it's easy to just think of it as a jackpot.
Right, like hitting the lottery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we aren't talking about a fender bender at a stoplight here. What kind of sheer devastation happens in an auto versus bus collision to warrant a jury awarding that level of compensation?
This directly ties back to the human element we discussed earlier.
Okay.
When you see a verdict of $16.5 million, it is crucial for you to understand that these millions are not lottery winnings.
Right.
They are the calculated mathematical reflection of profound, irreversible loss.
How did they even calculate that?
To secure a verdict like that, an attorney brings in economic actuaries to project costs out over 40 or 50 years. They calculate the precise cost of 247 in-home nursing care for decades. They calculate the cost of 5 or 6 future reconstructive surgeries, factoring in medical inflation.
So it's very precise.
Highly precise. They calculate the total loss of a lifetime of earning potential. These massive numbers are strictly calculated lifelines designed to sustain a person whose life has been fundamentally altered.
That reframes it completely. It's not a windfall. It's a lifeline.
Exactly.
It's the literal physical cost to keep someone alive, housed, and functioning after a disaster.
Yeah.
And that human element is strongly reflected in the client testimonials included in the source material, too.
Yeah.
They don't just talk about the monetary figures.
No, the clients focus on the process.
Right. They describe Norman Gershon as thorough and highly prepared, which speaks of that relentless courtroom advocacy and the heavy capital investment in experts we just talked about.
The war chest in action.
Exactly.
But
they also consistently call him compassionate and responsive. There's a direct quote from a client that reads, "He was confident, professional, and delivered results beyond my expectations."
And that quote really encapsulates the dual role of a trial attorney in these catastrophic cases.
How so?
Well, you need the ruthless preparation, the war chest, and the confidence to battle the insurance company's actuarial algorithms.
Right, you need the fighter.
But you also need profound compassion and responsiveness to guide a deeply traumatized victim through the darkest, most terrifying period of their entire life.
That makes sense.
When someone's world has been turned upside down by a fiery crash, having a steady, confident hand navigating the labyrinth of the legal and financial aftermath, it's just as critical to their survival as the surgical team repairing their physical injuries.
It really is a full circle journey we've taken today.
It definitely is.
We started with the absolute terrifying unpredictability of a late night drive on a New York City parkway.
That quiet 2.0's AM drive.
Yeah. We visualized the sudden screech of tires, the impact with a tree, and the microscopic physics of pressurized fuel and electrical sparks, instantly transforming a safe vehicle into a toxic, fiery trap.
We saw the life-saving heroics of the first responders, too, the ones who thread the needle in the dark to pull victims from the flames.
And from the chaotic scene of the crash, we followed the timeline forward. We explored the devastating ripple effect of human error.
How a single moment of speeding, fatigue, or impairment can irrevocably alter multiple lives.
Exactly. We examined the daunting reality of facing aggressive insurance adjusters who weaponize a victim's vulnerability to protect corporate profits.
It's a harsh reality.
It is. And finally, we looked at the multi-million dollar courtroom battles led by veteran advocates, the lawyers that other lawyers call when the stakes are highest who step into that fray.
They use forensic science, economic actuaries, and decades of trial experience to force accountability.
And secure the massive resources necessary to make these victims as whole again as legally possible. It's a heavy topic, but an incredibly important look at the complex physical and legal systems operating quietly behind the scenes of our daily commutes.
It certainly changes how you view the physics of the vehicles around you and the architecture of the roads you drive on every single day.
It really does. Which brings us to the close of our deep dive today.
We covered a lot of ground.
We did. And we want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over based on everything we've unpacked from these sources.
Okay.
If a single moment of late night fatigue, or just a few miles per hour over the speed limit on a dark 1930s parkway curve, can result in a fiery entrapment, complex $16 million lawsuits, and a lifetime of irreversible trauma.
Yeah.
How much absolute unspoken trust are we placing in every single random stranger we share the road with tonight?